This is Dan's Mega 65 Digest for July 2026, Calypso C, Part 2. The story so far. Back in May, we introduced the Calypso C Cross Compiler, a highly capable optimizing compiler toolchain for multiple vintage and retro computers, including the Mega 65. Calypso's default linker configuration works well for pure C programs that compile to a single Mega 65 PRG file, a fine starting point for learning the language and writing small to medium-sized programs. Then last month, we discovered a vintage Unix text game, written in C and based on the Curse's terminal display library, Rogue, Exploring the Dungeons of Doom. I got the idea in my head that given how portable C can be on a good day, it might be possible to use the original source code for Rogue to make a faithful version for the Mega 65. I would just need to replace the Curse's display library with a Mega 65 equivalent, and everything would just work, right? Without further changes, I ended up with a program that Calypso tried and failed to build into a single PRG file 112 kilobytes in size. While the Mega 65 has enough memory for that much code and data, its memory architecture and kernel don't support a single PRG file that large. I will need to use advanced memory management, coding, and bootloader techniques, along with some powerful features of Calypso, to produce a Mega 65 program that will load and run this much code and data. I owe most of this article to Kibo and his work on the Mega Sputum graphic adventure game player, which is built in Calypso, uses many of these techniques, and serves as a useful code example for large Mega 65 projects in the C language. The final solution uses a combination of multiple techniques, each of which are worth knowing about, so you can apply them selectively to your own projects. But before we dive into the thrilling world of linker configuration, some news. Amiga 500 Core in progress. The Mega 65 gets its first Amiga core. Psi 2002 of the C64 core project has launched an FPGA core that recreates an Amiga 500. This early version is feature complete and supports the OCS chipset and PAL video output with 512 kilobytes of chip RAM and 512 kilobytes of slow RAM. Connect an Amiga mouse, or mouster, or tank mouse, to port 1, and a joystick to port 2. Disk support is currently limited to 880 kilobyte ADF disk images on the SD card in a single DFO virtual drive. It loads Kickstart and Workbench from disk images, and can run demos and games. Yes, including Lemmings. You will need to acquire files for Kickstart 1.3, revision 34.5, Workbench 1.3 ADFs, and any other ADF disks you might want to run. Put the Kickstart ROM on the SD card in the folder named Amiga as a file named kick.rom. The author has clarified that this was largely an AI-assisted port of Minimig that he won't have time to maintain. This version will likely inform an active sibling project that will carry it forward. Head to Discord to download the latest test version, and don't miss the project's documentation website, link in the article. I know lots of people who have been waiting for this milestone for the Mega 65 project, and I can't wait to see what develops. Commodore 128 Core in progress. Meanwhile, Stefan Eilers has a Commodore 128 Core in progress with an early release for people to try. So far, only 40-column mode and IEC disk drives are supported. It does not yet support cartridges, 80-column mode, or virtual disk images off the SD card. But there's meaningful progress, and you can play with it. You will need Commodore 128 ROMs for this one as well. See Stefan's blog post for the latest core download, and check out the GitHub repo for additional files you'll need. Links in the article. More Mr. to Mega documentation. Psy 2002 has also extended the Ultimate Mr. to Mega porting guide with a supplement on the QNICE CPU and the shell ROM that provides the pop-up menus. If you're interested in porting Mr. cores, be sure to keep track of these useful updates. Okay, back to the game. Goals. If I were making a game for the Commodore 64 that required 112 kilobytes of code and data, I'd have no choice but to build it in a way that loaded pieces from disk at moments during play. Keeping only a small portion in the Commodore 64's 64 kilobytes of memory at a time. The Mega 65 has 384 kilobytes of main memory, so I should be able to get Rogue to run entirely from memory after it is loaded the first time, using the disk only to save and restore the game state at the request of the player, and perhaps to save a high score table to disk at the end of each game. The DLOAD command can only load a PRG file into a single contiguous region of memory in bank 0, and will refuse to load a PRG file larger than 53 kilobytes. I will need to write my own custom program, known as a bootloader, that loads discontiguous chunks of the game's code and data into banks 0 and 1. The user will load and run the bootloader program to start the game. This requires splitting the game code and data into chunks. The default Calypso linker configuration only knows how to build a single PRG file of 32 kilobytes, but it is possible to give the linker more specific instructions to fit the target architecture. I will need to configure the Calypso linker to organize the program according to my desired memory map. I will also need to tell the Calypso compiler how to access code and data across banks 0 and 1 once the linker has placed it there. The compiler doesn't do this automatically. It doesn't know anything about what the linker will do. I'll need to be explicit about how I want the machine code that Calypso generates to use the Mega 65 memory system according to the needs of the program. Lastly, I want to fit the entire program into banks 0 and 1. Technically, that's 128 kilobytes of space, but that has to include zero page registers, the CPU stack, and dynamic memory allocation space. While the program is loading from disk, the kernel will be using the disk system memory at the beginning of bank 1, so I can't just load data directly into that space. In theory, I can hide the kernel while I'm not using it, but it would be easiest if I could just keep it in memory. Overall, there's something between 24 kilobytes and 32 kilobytes of the first two banks that I cannot use for program code and data. So, I will have to reduce the size of the game. Some of this will just be a bit of belt tightening. I may be able to reduce the game's reliance on the C standard library, so I'm pulling in less of its code. Worst case scenario, I'll just need to use more banks. My target for now is to use only banks 0 and 1. Why only 32 kilobytes? 32 kilobytes doesn't seem like much. Why is Calypso's default maximum PRG size so small? When you type the command dload some file, the Mega 65 loads the complete contents of the file into memory starting at address 2001. I'm obviously going to give all addresses in hexadecimal going forward. That's just what I normally do. It is universally expected that the beginning of this data is a basic program that can be run. The file can contain other information beyond the basic program. DLOAD just paints all of the data from the file into RAM and doesn't care what it is. We can take advantage of this to make runnable programs in machine code, such as assembled from assembly language or compiled from a language like C. The start of the PRG file is a short basic program that invokes the machine code that appears after the basic program in the file. This is what Calypso produces when you ask it to build a PRG file. DLOAD loads the program into Mega 65 RAM in bank 0. The next reserved region in RAM starts at address F700, where BASIC keeps some of its variable storage. DLOAD will refuse to load a PRG larger than F700-2001 or D6FF bytes, or 55,039 bytes, about 53 kilobytes. This is the largest possible size of a program written in pure BASIC. The tokenized BASIC code cannot go beyond that address. When machine code is involved, we have to take the rest of the Mega 65's memory system into account, especially how the CPU locates machine code instructions. We've covered a few of these concepts in previous digests, but it's important enough to review. The Mega 65 memory system has 2 to the power of 28, or 268,435,456 possible addresses, a 28-bit address space. Some of these addresses are connected to memory, others are connected to peripherals, such as the VIC video chip, and most aren't connected to anything, reserved for future expansion. The 45GS02 CPU has ways it can access any of these addresses, using 4 bytes to store the address and leaving the top 4 bits set to 0. For backwards compatibility with the MOS6502 lineage of CPUs, most 45GS02 CPU features expect the addresses of things to be only 2 bytes, or 16 bits. In particular, the program counter, which keeps track of the address of the next instruction to execute, is only 16 bits wide. It'd be a shame if these features could only access the first 2 to the power of 16 or 65,536 addresses of memory. So instead, the memory system maintains a 16-bit address space that assigns regions of the 16-bit addresses to regions of 28-bit addresses. These assignments can be changed by the program as needed. When the kernel is active, it uses a 16-bit memory map that puts kernel code at 16-bit addresses C000 to CFFF, hardware registers at D000 to DFFF, and more kernel code at E000 to FFFF. Kernel code actually lives in upper regions of the 28-bit address space within 28-bit addresses 20000 to 3FFFF. That's banks 2 and 3. There is still RAM at 28-bit addresses C000 to FFFF, but the kernel sets the memory system so 16-bit addresses C000 to FFFF refer to the kernel code in I/O registers. The RAM is shadowed in the 16-bit address space by the kernel's memory settings. This is how the dload command can load a 53-kilobyte PRG file into the RAM underneath the kernel code visible at those 16-bit addresses. This establishes a practical size limit on machine code in a PRG file loaded by the dload command. Without changing the memory settings, the CPU can only see machine code from the PRG file up to address BFFF. BFFF minus 2001 is 9FFE, or 40,958 bytes, or about 40 kilobytes. It's entirely reasonable for a program to execute machine code that changes memory settings before accessing code at higher 16-bit addresses. If we were writing an assembly language program, this would be straightforward, because we have complete control over where the entry point of the program is in memory. When writing a C program, we delegate that decision to the linker. We'll need a way to tell the linker to put certain things in certain places if we want more control. But wait, why did I say 32 kilobytes earlier if we have 40 kilobytes? That's one last detail. Calypso's default linker configuration keeps everything in a single region of 32 kilobytes from 16-bit addresses 2001 to 9FFF. This leaves A00 to BFFF unassigned. Setting custom linker configuration. When we first started with Calypso, I said there is a file named mega65-plane.scm that is included with Calypso, and you specify it on the linker command line. I also said it's suitable for simple programs. See the article for the complete contents of this file. Without understanding the syntax of this file, you can see where it sets the 32 kilobyte limit. We could change x9FFF to xBFFF to extend the maximum PRG size to 40 kilobytes. This file uses the Scheme programming language to define a data structure named memories. You don't need to know much about Scheme, except that all the parentheses need to match, and the little single quote mark on the second line is important. All of the important settings are within the second set of parentheses. In this case, the configuration file defines a set of memory entries. Each one has a name, such as program or zero page, and some properties in their own sets of parentheses. From top to bottom, mega65-plane.scm defines 4 regions of Mega 65 memory and declares their purpose like so. Program. In the address range 2001 to 9FFF, the linker can use this memory for any purpose. It must use the beginning of the region, address 2001, for the start of the program. Calypsy generates a basic PRG preamble that invokes the sys command with address 200E, which is just enough space for the preamble. Zero page. In the address range 0002 to 007F, there exists RAM that Calypsy will recognize as the zero page, the 45GS02 base page, and use as register space. It stops at 007F to preserve the kernel variables in the upper half of the zero page. A program that completely shuts off the kernel could change this configuration to dedicate more of the zero page to program registers. Stack page. The 45GS02 CPU stack is in the address range 0100 to 01FF by default. Free space. Memory in the range 1600 to 1EFF is available for programs to use. In this case, it is configured as a place to stash the initial zero-page contents when using the pragma directive we saw in a previous digest. I don't know if you remember that. I think that was a couple months ago. The pragma directive that says, please stash all the basic and kernel memory while we execute the program so that we can return to basic later. There's a pragma statement for that. This tells Calypsy that it has 32 kilobytes of space in which to place code, data, and variables, all in bank zero. If the linker runs out of space before it has placed everything, it aborts the process and reports an error. To provide Calypsy with a custom configuration file, create a file similar to mega65-plane.scm in your project and give it a name that starts with mega65- and ends with .scm. Provide the file path to the linker command line instead of mega65-plane.scm, such as in your makefile. Calypsy memory concepts. Let's take a moment to clarify Calypsy's memory configuration terminology. Memory. A region of contiguous memory declared for a particular purpose in the linker configuration with certain attributes. For example, the name program, as defined in mega65-plane.scm. Section. A way that memory is used with an internal name used by the compiler and linker. For example, the name code represents memory that contains machine code. Fragment. A piece of memory usage that belongs to a section and is placed into a memory by the linker. Fragments are generated by the compiler. For example, each function in C source code becomes a fragment in a code section. Type. The fundamental usage type of a memory. A section can be bound directly to a specific memory or can be associated with any memory of a corresponding type. A memory whose type is any allows the linker to decide how to best use the memory. For example, the name text refers to executable code. Placement group. A subdivision of a memory to allow for assigning multiple types in a single address range. Recall that the compiler takes a C source file and produces an object file. The object file defines fragments that belong to sections. The linker takes all of the object files for the project and tries to place fragments into memory locations based on the linker configuration. For example, code sections would all be placed in a memory configured to accept code. A few useful section types to know about. Code is the executable machine code. Data refers to initialized data, such as global variables assigned a definition with their declaration. Z data is uninitialized data, which can be set to zero at the beginning of the program. And C data is constant data, such as string constants. Calypsy can generate a report of all of the linker's decisions. This is a really handy way to make sure your linker configuration is doing the right thing. Back in May, we saw that the Mega65 Starter project is already set up to generate this report as the file hello-mega65.lst. You will be changing this in your makefile, so it'll be your program-mega65.lst. Configuring heap memory. A C program can allocate an arbitrary amount of memory determined while the program is running using a built-in memory management system known as the heap. To use this system, include the standard library header stdlib.h and use functions such as malloc and free, malloc memory allocation. See the article for an example. If you build the example program that I included in the article with the default mega65-plane.scm linker configuration, compiling and linking will succeed and the program will run, but it will report out of memory, then quit. This is because the default linker configuration does not assign any memory to the heap. To fix this, you add a memory definition to the project's custom linker configuration file. Again, see the article for an example. This configuration defines an 8 kilobyte block of heap memory for the linker to assign, then assigns it to a memory at address A000. Most blocks come from the object files of the program, but blocks for the heap and stack need to be defined explicitly. Try setting up the Mega65 starter project with this configuration, the example in the article, and see how it changes the report in the listing file. An important note about heap memory here. Calypso only knows how to use 16-bit addresses when allocating dynamic memory. While you can manipulate the memory system settings to map those addresses to upper banks, it's easiest to just assume that the heap will use RAM in bank 0 and keep its 28-bit addresses unshadowed when messing with the memory system. Far pointers. We have seen how to access specific addresses in bank 0 using pointers. This allowed us to access registers in the D000 to DFFF range by casting the numerical address to a pointer type, then dereferencing the pointer. A pointer such as this one refers to the 16-bit address space. The pointer data is 16 bits, and Calypso uses the CPU's 16-bit access mode in the code that it generates. We've seen that there are several ways to access color memory, including a way to use registers starting at D800 as a window into the first 1 kilobyte of color memory, or 2 kilobytes while manipulating the CRAM2K register. For a full explanation, see color memory in the Mega65 compendium. We've also discussed it in previous digests. It's often easiest to access color memory at its physical location at the 28-bit address FF80000. In machine code, you could use 32-bit indirect addressing to get at these addresses. Calypso can also do this, but it needs to be told to do so explicitly. The solution is to use what's known as a far pointer. To declare a far pointer, use the type qualifier underscore underscore FAR before the asterisk in the pointer type. The far qualifier is part of the pointer's type, and makes the type distinct from a regular non-far pointer. A far pointer's data is 32 bits, and Calypso uses the CPU's 32-bit access mode in the code that it generates. This typically requires more machine code instructions and some space in zero page, so it takes more CPU cycles and is more difficult for Calypso to optimize. Calypso far pointers can refer to any address, but for efficiency purposes, pointer arithmetic is not allowed to leave the bank. If you need to cross banks, Calypso also has a huge pointer type, underscore underscore H-U-G-E, that doesn't have this restriction at the expense of needing more machine code. Far variables. You can tell Calypso to place a global variable into the Mega65's upper memory. To do this, use the underscore underscore far or underscore underscore huge qualifier with the variable type. This has two effects. The compiler requires the far or huge qualifier on pointers that refer to the variable, and the compiler adds the variable to a section of type far or huge if it is initialized, or zfar or zhuge if it is not initialized. The linker attempts to place these sections in appropriate memory based on the linker configuration. If no memory is defined to hold far data, as is the case in the default linker configuration, the linker aborts with an error. See the article for an example of linker configuration that declares a memory of far data. Setting up far memory and using it for variables gives Calypso permission to spread out your data storage, but remember that it comes at the expense of slower access and more code generated. Every use of a far variable, or dereferencing a far pointer, requires 32-bit indirect addressing, which involves storing an address in zero page and invoking the addressing mode. Reducing printf. In the previous digest, I mentioned that using C standard library functions can drag a lot of code into your project. While printf is powerful for formatting output in complex ways with very little calling code, it comes at the cost of a big chunk of library code to support all of its formatting features. As a test, I wrote a simple program that makes a single call to printf, using one of its most expensive formatting features, rendering floating-point numbers. This produced a PRG of 10,983 bytes. That's quite a lot for a single function call. Calypsy has a cool trick to help with this. Calypsy actually has several versions of printf it can choose to include, each with an increasing selection of supported formatting features. The compiler reviews all uses of printf and related functions in your program and selects the leanest version of the string formatting engine that supports all of the features the program needs. In my test, I forced Calypsy to use the beefiest version of printf by formatting a floating point number. If I change the printf call to only use integer formatting, I get a PRG of 4,860 bytes. That's a big improvement, and I still have many useful formatting features I can use with this version. While looking over how Rogue uses printf, I thought maybe I could save a few more bytes by writing my own version with even fewer features. Perhaps it was foolhardy to try to write my own version of the most famous standard library function of all time, but I got a positive result. By limiting it to just integer, string, and character types, I managed to write a smaller printf that brought my test program down to 3,708 bytes. If absolutely no string formatting is needed, the program is better off using putS instead of printf. Now my test program only prints a simple string, and this compiles to 2,761 bytes. So use putS if you're not going to do any formatting. Reducing exit. While on this topic, Calypsy can also save a few bytes if your program never exits. Many Commodore programs never bother to exit to the ready prompt because users don't need it. When the user is finished with the program, they simply reset the computer. Calypsy normally attaches a chunk of cleanup code in case the program returns from the main function or calls the exit function. If your program doesn't need this exit code, it can request that it be omitted with a linker argument, dash dash RTATTR, exit equals simplified. I saw a savings of 87 bytes when I did this with the test program. Not much, but I'll take all the help I can get. Reducing Rogue. If I were writing this game from scratch, I would try to get something working within the default 32 kilobytes and only start mixing in advanced techniques with a working application. The responsible thing to do when porting Unix Rogue to the Mega 65 would be to cut out entire features, potions, scrolls, even monsters, down to this size, then start making decisions so I can add stuff back in. I'm not going to go quite this far, but I do want to see how much space I'll actually need to get the game going. I started by stripping out all of the Unix-specific stuff I mentioned last month. I simplified main.c extensively, having the program enter an infinite loop instead of exiting. I kept wizard mode disabled in the build, and deleted code related to encrypting the wizard password. I don't need that. Nearly all screen manipulation was happening in calls to my curses alternative, so I was able to clean up or replace calls to writing to the Unix standard output stream, printf, fflush, etc. My custom printf implementation is now just a limited sprintf, which performs string formatting into string memory. This gets written to the screen by my curses library. A big space hog turned out to be the rogue source file rip.c, which handles all of the game ending logic and exiting the program. When you die, this code prints a large ASCII art tombstone with your name on it, and implements this as a collection of large strings stored in program memory. The tombstone is charming, and I'll want to replace it, but removing the inline strings for the art saved 482 bytes alone. There's a similar ASCII art mural for the unlikely event when you win the game, which I also removed temporarily. I might replace these with separate files loaded from disk as needed, or load them separately into Bank 4 instead of keeping them in program memory during the game. I also disabled the high score file for now. According to the linker, my changes brought the program down to C9EF of code, 185D of data, 1000 reserved for C-Stack and 69A4 of Z-Data, for a total size of 15BFO, or about 86 kilobytes. Designing a memory map. My goal for now is to get a version of Rogue working that keeps the Mega 65 kernel in memory. This gives me the following restrictions around which I can plan a memory map. Zero page. 0002 to 008F are available for Calypso to use for fast variables similar to CPU registers. 0090 to 00FC are used by the kernel for various purposes. CPU stack. 0100 to 01FF is the default location of the CPU stack. Calypso uses machine code instructions for calling subroutines and may use the CPU stack for data. Calypso also maintains a separate C stack for function arguments and such located elsewhere. Map register. The CPU map register determines how the 16-bit address space maps to the 28-bit address space in 8 kilobyte chunks. The kernel needs 0000 to 1FFF, that's 8 kilobytes, to stay unmapped, referring to physical RAM in bank 0. It also needs E000 to FFFF, or 8 kilobytes, to map to the kernel's own machine code in bank 3. ROM C and I.O. The kernel expects C000 to CFFF to refer to additional kernel code selected with the ROM C register bit D030 bit 5. It also expects I.O. registers, the VIC4, the SID, etc., at D000 to DFFF, selected with the C64-style banking register bits 0001, bits 0 and 1. The map register leaves the 8-kilobyte region C000 to DFFF unmapped so that these other banking mechanisms maintain control of those pages. Disk variables. When the kernel is accessing a D81 disk image or the internal floppy drive, it needs additional variable space in bank 1 at 10000 to 11FFF. I won't be accessing the disk often, but it's easiest to just assume that memory is reserved for the entire duration of the program. Recall that the map register specifies which 8 kilobyte regions are mapped or unmapped, and applies an offset to the mapped regions to translate its 16-bit address to a 28-bit address. Also recall that the first four regions must share a single offset setting, map low, as must the last four regions, map high. To keep the kernel code mapped at E000 to FFFF, the map high offset must be 30000, which effectively rules out any custom mapping of 8000 to BFFF. If we set any of those regions to mapped, they'd use a 30000 offset, which isn't useful. So, 8000 to BFFF stay unmapped and refer to memory in bank 0. This is a good place to put the heap. 0000 to 1FFF needs to refer to bank 0 memory, so we can't set that region to mapped, at least not with a non-zero offset. But I can leave it unmapped and use the rest of 2000 to 7FFF, that's 24 kilobytes, as a map window to access upper memory. To do so, I would set map low with an offset that gets added to the 16-bit address to form the 28-bit address. This doesn't have to be memory in upper banks. It can also refer to other addresses in bank 0 to access the RAM being shadowed by the kernel ROM and banking mechanisms at C000 to FFFF. So, my first guess at a memory strategy is to reserve parts of physical RAM in banks 0 and 1 as described, assigning the heap to 8000, then divvy up the rest into 24 kilobyte regions that I can access using map low and the 16-bit addresses 2000 to 7FFF. I get four full 24 kilobyte regions, plus another 8 kilobytes at the end of bank 1 that I can use the same way or come up with a special purpose for later. The 28-bit addresses for these regions are 02000, 0A000, 12000, 1-800 and the little one at 1-E-000. If I really want to use that little one at the end, I'll need to account for the color memory window at 1F800 to 1FFFF, such as by pushing the color pointer ahead by 2 kilobytes. I think we discussed that at a previous digest. Not that important, but you do need to do that if you don't want that little region of memory to collide with color memory. In theory, that's 104 kilobytes that I can use for both code and data. In practice, I can only use 24 kilobytes at a time, so I will need to do the following. Step 1. Organize the rogue code and its corresponding data into self-contained 24 kilobyte regions. Tell the linker which code goes in which region. Step 2. Tell the linker to treat each region as if it starts at 16-bit address 2000. Step 3. Tell the linker to produce a separate file for each region that can be loaded into memory. Step 4. Write a bootloader program that loads each region into its final location. And finally, step 5, add code to move the MAPLO window when code in one region wants to call code in another region. We'll cover the first 4 steps in the rest of this article. We'll save that last step 5 for next month so we can take our time to enjoy it. Configuring sections. Recall that our linker configuration defines a memory named program at addresses 2001 to 9FFF of type any, with some additional parameters to set it up like a runnable program. With this configuration, the linker will try to fill this memory with code and data fragments, and also set the startup routine to call the main function wherever it ends up. For rogue, I want to declare memory for each of my regions, then assign code and data to specific regions. See the article for an example of configuring a separate 24 kilobyte region of memory. This configuration uses 2 memory entries. The first one declares sections where the linker will place fragments and defines the range of 16-bit addresses that the linker will assign to those fragments. The second one declares where the region will live in the 28-bit address space. In the first memory, there is a section for each type of data. These sections are organized into 2 placement groups, one for sections that will contain information, the bits placement group, and one for the section that will contain uninitialized memory, the no bits placement group. Uninitialized memory is filled with zeros by the startup code that Calypso adds to the program. As such, it doesn't need to be saved to disk the way code in initialized memory is. You'll see the phrase BSS in documentation on this subject. This stands for Block Started by Symbol, which is the term of art for uninitialized memory regions in object files. The second memory entry declares how the sections of the first memory are actually stored in the 28-bit address space. The property named scatter2 in the first memory tells Calypso that it should pretend the fragments are being placed at the 16-bit addresses, but they will actually be stored at the 28-bit addresses of the second memory. Calypso needs both sets of addresses because that startup code uses 28-bit addressing to zero out the uninitialized memory. I defined 5 regions this way, giving each one a 16-bit starting address of 2000 and a unique 28-bit starting address. The first region is special in several ways. For one, it actually starts at 2200 to leave a little bit of room for the bootloader that I'll add later. Also, it gets attributes to tell Calypso to put the startup code at 2200, so the bootloader knows how to invoke the program once it is fully loaded. The startup code provided by Calypso expects specific section names, types, and placements, which this configuration accommodates. There's a minor oddity here due to how I have chosen to provide my own bootloader. Calypso's program start section is actually a basic preamble that expects to be at the starting address, and the program's machine code start address is just after it. I have no use for a program start, and it's wasting a few bytes, but I'm leaving it in just as the easiest way to account for the startup code. You can see the assembly language source for the startup code here in Calypso's special files folder. See the article for the file path I'm referring to. I bet I could customize this further, but this is fine for now. I'm just going to leave that little bit of generated basic preamble in there that I'm just not going to use. With a custom configuration like this, Calypso needs me to decide where to put three special types of memory. We already saw the heap earlier for dynamic memory. We also saw C-Stack briefly, which had an implicit location in the default configuration, but now we need to declare it explicitly. Finally, Z-Data, the default section for uninitialized variables, needs an explicit location. I decided to go with 4 kilobytes of heap at 8000, 3 kilobytes for C-Stack at 9000, and 1 kilobyte for Z-Data at 9C00. These were arbitrary decisions just to get the program to build, and I may have to adjust them later if my program runs out of one type of memory. One more, and we're done. As we will see next month, CPU instructions that change map have to be careful not to change the mapping of the region containing those instructions. Otherwise, the CPU will pull the rug out from under itself and won't be able to see the rest of instructions that complete the adjustment. I declared a new memory outside of the five swappable regions to contain the code that does the swapping at 1600 to 1EFF. Other than the name and address ranges, its configuration looks like any of the other regions. Assigning code to sections. I can tell Calypso to put a C module into a section by issuing a pragma at the top of the C source file. The pragma tells Calypso that all of the fragments produced for the subsequent code in the file should be assigned to the given sections for each type of fragment. You can get fancy with this, with multiple pragmas in a single file, but for my initial attempt, I just want everything in a given C module to live in the assigned region, so it is visible when the region is active. The pragma statement that tells Calypso to put all the code that follows into region 1 looks like this. Hashtag pragma clang section text equals quote R1 text close quote data equals quote R1 data close quote RO data equals quote R1 RO data close quote BSS equals quote R1 BSS close quote. Each of those pieces were names that Calypso understands: text, data, RO data, that's read-only data, and BSS. The things in the quotes, those are just names I came up with, and those are the ones that match the linker configuration file. If I were writing this program from scratch, I would give each region a purpose and try to organize my code appropriately. For this port of Rogue, I will start by assigning C modules to regions based on their compiled sizes so that I'm making efficient use of the memory in each region. This can be a delicate balance, and as you'll see next month, I had to make some sacrifices to cram Rogue code, which was not intended for this, into these regions. Exporting sections as raw files. Calypso cannot build this program as a single runnable PRG file. Instead, I need it to produce one file per region. Each region will be loaded separately by the bootloader. For this technique, edit the makefile or wherever you have your linker command, and remove the output format equals PRG argument and the -o hello.prg argument. Replace it with the following arguments: -o common.raw, --raw-multiple-memories, --no-merge-raw-memories, --output-format=raw. So we're changing the output format from PRG to raw. We are changing the output file name from hello.prg to common.raw. I'll explain that in a second. And we've got two extra flags, raw multiple memories and no merge raw memories. Calypso will produce a file for each memory in the configuration in which code or initialized data are placed. Empty sections don't get files. Notice that there's still a -o argument that specifies an output name, which we were previously using for the PRG name. This name is used for the first non-empty memory that appears in the configuration file. I organized my configuration in address order, so the first non-empty memory is the one named common. This ends up in the file whose name is set with the -o argument, common.raw. All subsequent non-empty memories get files named after the second memory with .raw added to the end automatically. writing the bootloader. The linker is compiling the program into 5 files, but none of them are files that the user can deload and run. We need a short program that loads all of the regions into their designated memory locations, then starts the game. My bootloader is a basic program. It uses the bload command to load each of the 5 files, then uses the sys command to start the program, with the entry point in region 0. I build my disk image such that each memory file is a PRG type file, but Calypsy doesn't insert the PRG starting address, so I use the raw mode of the bload command, the ;r flag. It's a best practice to make the bootloader the first program in the disk's directory listing, so run star, or the shortcut shift run stop, finds it. I use a tool from my makefile to build D81 disk images with the basic bootloader and all of the region files, and the tool lets me specify the order that the files appear in the directory on the disk. It's also a best practice to give the bootloader a specific name, autoboot.c65. This is a special file name recognized by the Mega65 kernel. If this file exists on a disk inserted in the drive, the Mega65 loads and runs it automatically. You may have seen the intro disks do this. This file also loads and runs when the user enters the boot command. We've made some good progress. We learned some useful features for accessing upper memory in Calypsy, and how to set up and use the heap for dynamic memory allocation. We figured out a strategy to spread our 86-kilobyte program across several regions of 24 kilobytes each, and use the map register to access one region at a time using 16-bit addresses. We also figured out how to tell Calypsy to put specific parts of the program into specific regions, and to write each region as a separate raw binary file instead of a single PRG file. With just a bit of BASIC, we have a way for the user to load and run the program just like any other, using a bootloader that installs the regions according to our plan. There's one last thing we need for this strategy, and it's a doozy. Calypsy does not know how to change the map register when it needs to switch regions to access code and data. I will have to do this manually in the code itself. For example, if the game loop is in region 0, and the code that handles potions is in region 2, when the player drinks a potion, the code will have to call the drinking function in a special way that switches to region 2, performs the drinking logic, then switches back to region 0 to resume play. I will need to make some decisions about how to organize the regions to keep the region switching code easy to manage. In the next digest, we will build these last pieces, and hopefully finish this project. Thank you and welcome to all of the new Digest patrons that joined last month. If you'd like to support the Digest, visit ko-fi.com/ddaaann. For more, visit my website, dansanderson.com/mega65.